Thanks to all of you for coming today. And I really got interested in immunizations from the perspective of adolescent preventive service delivery. So this topic is really near and dear to my heart. And you'll recognize that we're really looking at the same things in Rochester as the group in San Diego, so this might sound a little bit familiar in terms of the topics that I'll be talking about. So we'll be looking at fitting it all in. Do immunizations interfere with other preventive services for adolescents? And I have nothing to disclose. So as you've heard around this week, quite a bit of new vaccines have been recommended for adolescents. These include Tdap, meningococcal vaccine, HPV, new recommendations for varicella, for influenza, as well as for hepatitis A. And in addition to this, there's quite a complex agenda for adolescent preventive care. So Bright Futures, which is supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommends counseling regarding risky behaviors, and those can include topics from safety, wearing a seatbelt, wearing a bike helmet, to tobacco and alcohol prevention, including sexual activity and STI prevention. In the obesity epidemic, we spend a lot of attention toward counseling about weight, healthy diet, and exercise, as well as emotional health and relationship issues. And this is if we just look at the counseling that we're supposed to talk about. In addition, we're expected to screen about numerous topics, screen for chlamydia, possibly check a hematocrit to screen for anemia. So it's quite a lot that's going on at a preventive visit for adolescents. So the problem is a very, very complex agenda, both from the perspective of preventive services and from immunizations. So we wanted to look at whether giving more immunizations reduced or enhanced the proportion of preventive care that's delivered to adolescents. And we hypothesized that patients who are up to date for immunizations would also have high rates of preventive counseling, so the people who were doing one well would be doing the other well, sort of from a quality perspective. Our specific objectives are to measure up-to-date rates of immunization, to measure the type and the extent of counseling that's delivered at Well Child Checks for adolescents, to assess whether patients who discuss more topics also have higher rates of up-to-date for immunization, and to assess how providing a vaccine at a visit affects the proportion of counseling that's provided. So we recruited 11 to 13-year-olds and 14 to 17-year-old adolescents who had had Well Child Checks through multiple methods. These methods included sending letters from practices on practice letterhead to patients who had had a recent Well Child Check, and also to recruit on-site in offices for patients who were currently having Well Child Checks and recruit them as they exited or immediately after their visit. We included 11 primary care practices, pediatric and family medicine practices, urban, suburban, and rural practices, and they were all located in upstate New York. And we had the adolescents complete a survey, which I'll explain a little bit more in detail, and chart reviews were also performed. So the chart review tool looked at immunizations that were given after age 10, because often we couldn't find the younger childhood immunizations, so we really focused on those that were given in adolescence, as well as the counseling documented. And we also recorded provider and patient characteristics. And our analyses included descriptive statistics, such as immunization rates and the counseling that was reported by the teens, as well as chi-square tests that compared provider and patient characteristics with the up-to-date rates and counseling that had been provided. We use logistic regression to look at the relationship between the proportion of counseling and being up to date for immunization, and then another type of model, a linear mixed model, to look at the relationship between getting any vaccine at a checkup and the proportion of counseling that's received. So just to tell you a little bit about the Young Adult Healthcare Survey, or the YACS, is a survey that's been previously validated in older adolescents, and we adapted it a little bit to include questions that were more pertinent for younger adolescents and also to ask some questions about immunizations that were not previously on this survey. So the survey asks patients about what preventive screening or counseling they received about risk behaviors, and as I mentioned, those would include safety, including seatbelt wearing, bike helmet use, tobacco, alcohol, drug consumption, steroid use, preventing pregnancy and STIs, what kind of counseling they got about weight, healthy diet, and exercise, depression, mental health, and relationship issues. It also asks about whether confidential care was provided, how helpful the team thought that each topic in counseling was, and what their communication and experience was with care. And then, as I mentioned, the questions that we added related to what immunizations they received at the visit. So this is an example of our sample. These are the characteristics of the patients that we included. You can see that the female and males are fairly equal in both the younger and older adolescent groups. We had mostly private patients included. This represents fairly well the demographics in our region, that about 14-15% of the patients were publicly insured or had no insurance. We had more pediatric practices participate, so that about 2/3 to 3/4 of our patients were in pediatric practices and more suburban practices that participated. This is reflective of where teens are seen in our area. So looking at the vaccination rates, they're actually very promising. If you think about what you might have seen elsewhere this week thus far, Tdap rates were extremely high in both the younger adolescents and the older adolescents, and there is a Tdap mandate for 6th grade in New York State. So this wasn't that surprising to us, but it's over 90%. For meningococcal vaccine, there was a significant difference between younger and older adolescents, with younger adolescents having rates in the 60% range and older adolescents having rates in the 80% range. And then, as you've seen elsewhere, for HPV 1, 2, and 3, rates are lower than for other vaccines, but actually we were happily surprised that rates were quite high for older adolescents, even for the 3rd dose of the vaccine. You can see that almost 70% of older adolescents had received 3 doses of HPV vaccine. Now keep in mind that we're recruiting patients from practices, and these are patients who are already receiving well child care, so this is not cross-sectional data, so you can't really relate it to a random digit dial study, because we know that these are patients who are already receiving preventive care. But it's great to see that of those teens getting preventive care, at least those rates are high, although the same can't be said for the younger teens' HPV rates, so there's still quite a lot to be done there. I know there are a lot of numbers on this slide, so I'll walk you through it. So I looked at up-to-date rates in 2 ways, in part because of those low HPV rates. So the first column, up-to-date, is counted as just having a Tdap and a meningococcal vaccine. And then you'll see the 3rd column over is if you had a Tdap, a meningococcal vaccine, and your first HPV if you were female. You can see that for both definitions of being up-to-date, if you're older, you're more likely to be vaccinated, and you're less likely to be vaccinated if you were seen by a family medicine physician, and you're less likely to be vaccinated if you live in a rural area. And then, this was surprising as well, that actually if patients were seen by a nurse practitioner for their most recent well child visit, they were more likely to receive an HPV vaccine. And then we looked at what percent of visits had a vaccine given, because a lot of these vaccines had been given previously. So of this most recent visit, 10% of the visits included a Tdap vaccine, 15% a meningococcal, 8% an HPV vaccine for girls, 6% included a hepatitis A vaccine, 8% a varicella vaccine, and 5% an influenza vaccine. So out of all the well child visits that we looked at, 37% of the visits had included some type of vaccine. And then we talk about all the different types of counseling that we provide at visits. So you'll see this over 2 slides, actually, and these are all of the different topics that we asked about patients receiving. So you can see that rates are actually fairly high, not as high as we'd like, but for counseling about weight and diet and exercise, those first 3 solid bars, are at least over 60% for both age groups. When it comes to talking about their friends, it seems to be a little bit less in the 40 to 50% range. School physicians know to talk about and do talk about frequently. But then when it comes to those risky behaviors and mood, we're much less careful, I'd say, about talking about all of those different topics. So particularly for drunk driving and violence, there are quite low rates. For older teens, there's 40% of discussions about drunk driving and closer to 20% when it comes to talking about violence. So there's quite a lot of room for improvement in those topics. And you can see for those 2 topics, there's a significant difference for younger teens compared to older teens. On the next slide, you'll see there's some just blue bars for younger teens because we did adapt the survey for younger teens, and we didn't talk quite as much about STIs, abuse, condom use, or birth control for the younger teens. But you can see that older teens are more likely to talk about cigarettes, drugs, and alcohol with their providers, but still at rates in the 50 to 60% range, and then very unlikely to talk about chewing tobacco or steroids. Young teens are very likely to talk about puberty with their providers in the 70% range, but very unlikely to talk about sexuality. And then in terms of these other sexuality-related topics for older teens, they were quite low, in the 20 to 30% range for discussions about sexually transmitted infections, abuse, condom use, or birth control. So again, a lot of numbers, so I'll walk you through this. But when we look at the proportion of counseling given, we see that if it's a negative number in that mean difference over on the right-hand side, then it means that that group gave less counseling. And the proportion of counseling is how many topics they covered out of the total number that they could have covered. So in this case, we didn't group it at all. We just said, okay, you have 18 topics to talk about. How many of them did you talk about? And in this case, they all got equal weight. So if you see a negative number, it means that they got less counseling. So we see that by age, actually, it was almost significant, but not quite, that older teens got more counseling, but it just verged on significance. For family medicine, those patients received less counseling than patients seen by a pediatrician. And then for rural and suburban patients, they received less counseling than patients in an urban settings. And then this is what we were really looking for, was to see if you got a vaccine at the visit, did that change how much counseling you got? And we found that yes, it did, that you receive a little bit less counseling if you get any kind of vaccine, so that's 37% of those visits, you are a little bit less likely to cover some counseling topics. And we wanted to look because we had chart reviews and we had these interviews of young teens who we've never interviewed before and older teens. And we wanted to see how well what they report correlate with the chart that we review. So for some topics, you'll see that they're quite good. So the numbers in this table refer to how well they correspond or how much agreement they have. So you can see for diet, they agree 70% for older and younger teens. However, when they disagree, the chart is more likely to report that the provider talked about diet. So anything that's highlighted in blue, you'll see that the chart is more likely to report. So, for instance, for alcohol, the rates were quite low for teens reporting that they discussed alcohol. They were agreed with the provider that they discussed alcohol. Only 50% agreed that they discussed it, but the providers report that they discussed it more often. In the light orange, this is where the teen is more likely to report that this happened. So if you look at whether they receive meningococcal, tetanus, influenza, or HPV, you see that the teens are actually over-reporting that they receive these vaccines. What surprised me, actually, is if you look at the numbers, the younger teens agree with the chart 80 to 85% of the time, but the older teens are not so great. They agree with the chart, especially for tetanus and influenza, 67 to 70% of the time. Now, this is in part because I didn't tell you about part of our study, that we also interviewed parents of the younger teens, and I'm not reporting that here because it would be too much data to show you, but my theory is that the young teens are just asking their parents what they got. So they actually agree quite well, where the older teens, we didn't involve the parents at all. So this is, I think, quite helpful to know. So in conclusion, we found that older urban and suburban pediatric patients are more likely to be up to date for vaccines. Counseling rates weren't different for teens who were up to date or not, and counseling rates on risky behaviors were quite low for young teens. We found that fewer topics were covered at visits where teens receive immunizations, and providers do tend to overreport their counseling that they give, and teens overreport the vaccines that they get. So there were some limitations to our study. We didn't tape the well child check, so we don't actually know what happened at the visit. We only know either what the chart says or what the teen tells us. We did have some poor representation from urban practices, and these are Western New York practices, and they may not be generalizable to other locations. We have a lot to still look at, so next we plan to examine the quality, which would be the patient satisfaction, of the topics that they cover related to the vaccines that they receive. We plan to measure whether counseling topics covered vary with specific vaccines, the number that were given, and whether specific vaccines were refused. Maybe that takes a lot of time. And also to assess whether using a patient questionnaire, such as the GAPS form, and a template, so some kind of document for the provider to fill out, increases both the counseling and the immunization rates. And in general, recommendations from this study would to give patients all vaccines they are eligible for concomitantly. So there's not a good reason for our meningococcal rates to be lower than our Tdap rates. To consider additional means to deliver preventive counseling, so maybe there's somewhere else we can reach adolescents outside of their well-child visit. We could refer them to websites, to handouts, back to their school for information, or possibly to social networking sites that the practice has online. The provider can maybe then better focus on issues that are most relevant or important to a specific teen. And we can also consider alternative means to provide vaccine counseling, such as websites or personal health records as they become more popular with patients. And I'd really like to thank my research team, Phyllis Vincelli, who's the project coordinator, is here today, Stan Schaefer and Allison Kennedy from the CDC, my mentor, Peter Szilagyi, our statisticians, Aaron Blumkin and Cookie Wang, and funding from the CDC. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both of our speakers. At this time, we'll open the floor for discussion and questions. We'll just ask that you could please come to the microphone in the middle of the room if you have a question. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Shannon Stokely from CDC, and thank you for those great presentations. My question's for Cindy. When you were doing the chart review and looking at counseling services, do providers typically use a checklist to record what they're giving, or are they actually writing it in the chart? And do you think that if they're using a checklist, do you think they're more likely to just check everything off out of habit, which may suggest why it's over-reporting compared to the adolescents?
Right. We saw lots of different ways that providers do this. So if they're using an EMR, they do kind of tend to have some standard wording that they just check off. We talked about 10 different things, and we gave them credit for it if they documented that they talked about that, but we don't really know what happened. If they're using paper records, some people would have a template where they might just check through a bunch of topics. And then we would also document if they actually talked about something very specific related to a counseling topic. But it is hard to really know what happened because their documentation isn't perfect.
If I could just follow up with an anecdote, we too are doing chart reviews, which we haven't finished yet, so I didn't report them, but we've certainly seen many records with a paper checklist that there's a line that just goes straight down through every topic, and it makes you wonder whether that was really discussed. The documentation of this is, I think, the major challenge.
It's a question for Mark. I'm Stan Schaefer from Rochester. When you found differences based on race and ethnicity in San Diego in immunization rates, was that based on bivariate analyses or multivariate? Could it have, if it was based on bivariate, could it have been related to where the patients received care? For instance, in a clinic situation as opposed to a private practice?
I'm pretty sure it was bivariate analysis, so it might be subject to that confounder, and I will have to go back to my statistician to see if we can look at that question. It's a good observation.
Thank you for that great presentation. I have a question, I guess, for both of you, and that is, did you look at who administered the vaccines and how that factored into the counseling for preventative services? In other words, if there was a separate person whose job was to administer vaccines apart from the physician counseling, did that have any impact on what you were all were seeing?
We have not looked at that question, and it's another good observation that if the two are completely separate, you would hope they wouldn't confound each other. But
yeah.
I don't have any specific data on that.
I think that's a great question. Actually, when I think about it, we did key informant interviews on these practices before, and I think pretty universally the nurses administered vaccines in all these practices, but it's certainly something we need to go back and verify. I think that's helpful.
You know, it just makes sense to me that if the doctor felt that he had to do everything and then give vaccines, he would certainly shorten the length of that counseling session as opposed to saying, okay, I'm done here, now I'm turning you over to someone else. That's why I was thinking about that. Thank you.
Question for Cynthia. You showed that about 90% of the teens or adolescents had a Tdap. Mm-hmm. But only about 37% got at least one vaccination at well child checks. So
one is that they're up to date, so they would have had it at a previous visit, and then the rate of 37% was at that well child visit that we were referring to, that most recent visit.
So did the children tend to get vaccinated in school-located clinics or mass clinics just for school entry requirement?
No, they'd been vaccinated just at previous visits. We just looked at the most recent well-child visit. So for the older teens, for instance, most of them received their vaccines maybe when they were 13 and now they're 17.
Well, that suggests that you have a really high rate of teens having routine well-child visits, a much higher rate than has been suggested is really occurring with adolescents.
And it might be because we're taking them from their practice, so we have a bias sample.
Okay, thanks.
All right, if there are no other questions, please join me in thanking our presenters one more time for the session.